Welcome to the 17th episode of the Animal Addicts podcast. On today's episode, we get another bio lesson from Casey and talk about some more flying favorites. Our animal of the week this week is the first of its kind featured on the podcast so far. If you would like to have a say in one of the animals of the week for next month when we're in Africa, you can join Patreon and take part in our poll. But for now, let's finish up Europe with the 17th episode of the Animal Addicts podcast. Welcome to the 17th episode of the Animal Addicts podcast. As always, we're your hosts, Allie.
And Casey.
And today we're going to talk about a whole new lot of animals. That just sounds weird. Like I should say a whole lot of animals. But yeah, so here we go. Let's jump into our new, well, I guess before we jump into our new animals. How you been, Casey? What have you been up to since I last saw you?
I've been up to registering for next quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Frustrating.
I don't even remember doing that well in advance of the wide semesters of the semester being. I feel like we did that after the semester ended.
Yeah, no, we do it like half a little bit after midterms, and you have to make a term plan ahead of time, which then has to get approved by your academic advisor. And if it gets approved, then you get a hold removed, so you can actually register when it's your day to register, and I had a backup term plan in case my initial one did not work. And when I went to go register, my insect ecology class was full. Also, it didn't have a wait list, which made me very mad.
That's weird that it didn't have a wait list.
I found a couple that didn't have wait lists.
How do you crash in the world of COVID?
I don't know. I don't think you can.
I guess you can.
Yeah.
Have you ever crashed a class? I've had a crash.
No, I've only ever wait listed.
Oh, okay.
It's like, I remember when people tried to crash in classes, it's like, there's people sitting on the stairs that are waitlisted. You're not getting in this class.
Oh, yeah, no. I think you either crashed or it was waitlisted. Yeah. I don't think you got to do both.
Yeah. It's like, I waitlisted once. I was surprised I got into class because I was like seventh in line.
Oh, wow.
I know. And I felt bad because I was waitlisting and there was people actually in the class standing up because I'm horrible.
Well, they should have gotten there earlier. Anyway.
So, and then there was a problem with my systematics class. For some reason.
What class?
Systematics.
Systematics, okay.
Yes. That's like phylogeny, the study of taxonomy, the relationship between different families.
Okay.
It's cool. But yeah, for some reason that did not go through. So I had to refresh the page, add that to my plan again, and then add that to my schedule. And it went through. Then I went to my backup plan to go to what was my backup plan if insect ecology was full. And that was restoration ecology, which was also full.
Ugh, annoying.
And no wait list.
That's really annoying.
Yes. And then what sucks is like there was like no other ecology course that I hadn't taken that had a cross section for the biology majors. Because it makes no sense for me to go into the other majors for a course when I need my upper division biology credits.
It's also just so crazy to me that they don't just count all ecology classes as a bio.
Yeah, because like there's environmental microbiology, but that it's a microbiology course. It doesn't count as a biology credits because it's for the
microbiology. So is there a degree in microbiology then?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, microbiology. I'm pretty sure there's one for mycology and entomology.
Also, to specify, my friend, I asked, molecular biology. That's what the PhD is for. Continue. Sorry. Oh.
I don't care.
Okay.
One of my friends is a molecular biologist, and I don't know what... Huh?
You're not a fan of it?
No. Which was weird, because we took the two upper division biology courses at my RJC together. It's funny, because I work with organisms. He works with the molecular biology, and I did better than him in the molecular biology section.
Oh, snap.
Which I found funny. Yeah, it was this very frustrating registering, because some of the other ecology courses seem fun and interesting.
Yeah.
Like, mycology I find interesting because fungus are weird.
Yeah.
Really weird. That was what I struggled with most when I went into my gen bio upper divisions at my community college. Because they're just bizarre with like reproduction and other stuff.
Oh, even worse than the crazy insect sex from last week?
Well, it's cool, but not like disturbing because they're like funguses because people wouldn't care so much.
Yeah.
But first off, there are several species that do not have sexes. They have mating types.
Interesting.
Yes, so a sex, basically what determines a sex is the gametes will have morphological differences. Like, look at egg and a sperm, they're clearly different. Egg, circular cell, and then sperm, it's absolutely tiny, looks like a tadpole. Mm-hmm. So those are sexes. When you look at the gametes of some fungi, they are identical. The only thing different about them is their chromosomes. Well, not even their chromosomes, because they don't have sex chromosomes. They will have genes that are determine what mating type there are, and then there's so many different variables. There's some funguses that have like 4,000 mating types.
What?
Yes, it's so weird, confusing, and odd.
He says gleefully.
Yes, it's awesome, but also still not my thing. But there is a book on my wish list. For Christmas on, I think it's called The Wonderful World of Fungi. But yeah.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, but one class my entomology professor recommended that we could take was insect biodiversity, which is where you delve more into the different families of insects
that sounds more interesting.
Yes, problem is, that's an entomology course. It doesn't count for bio major upper divisions.
And they also offer a degree in entomology then, I imagine.
Yes. My school actually has the second ranked entomology program in the world.
Behind who?
One of the University of Florida's. Okay. I don't remember which one.
They get a lot of bugs over there, Casey.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's similar over there. We owe that to citrus trees.
Oh.
Because University of California, Riverside started as a sidelist campus for, I believe, Berkeley. Mm-hmm. And we were working on developing different strain of oranges. I believe it was a seedless orange that they developed. And the entomology program came along because there's this pest that came over called the cottony cushion scale. And yeah. I didn't know what a scale insect was until I took this class. But yeah, it looks like a little puff. Well, the females do. They look like a little puffball that grows on them, and they can spread vectors and kill a plant and stuff like that. So a lot of economic incentive to try to control that. So it helped implemented the first biological control of a pest insect in the United States, which what they did is they researched into the ecosystems of the cottony cushiontail's native environment, and they found that there's a predatory beetle that feeds on them called the Vidalia beetle. Kind of looks like a ladybug. Did research on them, make sure that by introducing it wouldn't become like a pest and stuff like that. So they brought it over, released it into citrus fields, and took care of the cottony cushion scale problem.
Interesting.
Yep. And then a lot of times, because a lot of entomology research is into biocontrol and pest management, because it costs, there's tens of thousands of jobs and billions of dollars that could be lost every year.
Oh, yeah. If they wipe out crops and stuff, that makes sense.
Yep.
Crazy.
And there's also some that have been used to control weeds, because there's ground-dwelling insects that are root feeders and can kill plants by feeding on their roots.
Hmm.
And they do that to control certain weeds.
That'd be cool if you had specific insects at your house to control weeds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when I'm a grown-up, if I ever have money enough for a house and stuff, I'd mm-hmm. really want to have goats to, like, just mow the lawn for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have at it.
Yeah.
I know you hate lawns, but, you know, either way, the vegetation. Be like, have at it.
Yeah.
But also don't eat the actual plants that we want mm-hmm. to be there. What was that, your registration woes?
Yeah, so I was looking through trying to find, like, something else interesting because I prefer having 4 classes and 16 units instead of just 12.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I'm a nerd and, like, learning different stuff. So I was looking through all the available courses for this quarter for bio majors in the upper divisions. And there was nothing interesting for me because, like, my school has a well-known medical program, so there's a lot of stuff focused on medicine, like there's a parasitology class, virus class, like, interesting, but still not my thing. It's, like, more into wildlife and stuff like that, so I'm only taking three classes this quarter, and I'm taking evolution, systematics, and evolutionary and ecological physiology.
That sounds very heavy. I could not have done that. That would just get to be too much for me.
It's a good thing the biodiversity, like, I would have taken the biodiversity class if it weren't for the fact it overlapped with a class that I actually need to take. Because I'm crazy.
Well, speaking of oranges, Casey.
Oranges.
Did you know that Disneyland used to be just orange fields?
Does not surprise me.
Yeah, it's also in Orange County. That's the reason it's called that.
Really?
just orange fields, not fields, but groves. But I was thinking about Disney because I had a patient this last week, and she had, like, all kinds of Disney stuff on, and we were just talking about Disney and the fact that it's officially closed until January, which is wise. It should be, but we miss it terribly. And do you know one of the things I miss at Disney, Casey? I don't know if you're aware of this or not. I'm sure you're aware somewhat of it. Disney has a whole little batch of feral cats.
Oh, I do remember this.
Yes, to help keep the, which is hilarious, to keep the rodent population under in check, which is like Mickey. In Mickey's home, we have cats killing mice. But, and actually when I worked up in Orange County, we used to have people who'd come and buy, like cast members who'd come buy food for the cats. But anyway, I specifically miss Francisco, who is this such a sweet, also everyone, the cats of Disneyland have their own Instagram page. I suggest you follow it.
There's a cat at my school that has an Instagram page.
Yeah, a lot of times pets have Instagram pages because they're awesome. But Francisco is one of the kitties, and he's very friendly. So, like, some of the cats are kind of like, meh, don't really care about you. But he is usually over by Grizzly River Rapids, or Grizzly River Run, whatever it's called. And he's over in that area. And also he has, like, a twin, another one that looks a lot like him. And I was like, mind blown, there are two of you. But he's really friendly, and he'll come over to, like, the fence and let you pet him and stuff, and he's so sweet. And then one day we went to Trader Sam's one evening, and I lost my beanie because, you know, had a couple drinks. Well, let's be real. For me, I had one drink.
You're a lightweight.
Such a lightweight. I'm a disgrace to my Irish heritage.
Oh, my gosh.
That's really bad. But, and I just used the excuse that I was distracted by a cat because a cat came up. And one of the other girls I was with was like, Allie, a cat. She was like, look behind you. And I was like, a cat. So I was like petting the cat. And he was a little black cat. And I was petting the kitties. And then I think when we got up, I must have left my beanie. But because it was dark. But anyway, so I just claimed that I was distracted by a cat. But there are so many kitties at Disney, dude. And I miss them. I mean, I miss Disney, too.
I'm assuming they're not spayed or neutered, right?
They probably are, actually.
Oh, okay. That's better.
I don't know if they are, but I would imagine they are. Like, the ones that are friendlier, I'm sure they would have taken them in and gotten them fixed. Yep. I don't know. I didn't check them out. I'm not, like, lifting up the tail. You know? But I don't think they want them to just run crazy.
I would hope not.
They have a ton of cats there. They just want to have the cats to control the pests.
All right.
But yeah, there's a bunch of kitties there, and they're great, and I love them, and I miss them, and I really miss Francisco, because he's so friendly, and you can pet him, but it's the best ever. It's the best. And I just miss Disney, too, but I really miss Francisco. Dude, when Disney reopens, I'm going to go on such a shopping spree. Like, they are going to go from making no money to making an insane amount of money, because I'm going to go back and be like, I'm buying everything, because I haven't gotten any new pins in forever. And I need them. I need the pins, Casey.
Oh my gosh. I am addicted.
Dice. I am a dragon for dice. Now minifigures with D&D and then Disney pins. Like, when I lay them out, sometimes I lay them out on my bed to look at the whole collection in one go. And I'm like, I think there's over $1,000 in pins here. I don't know if it's $1,000, but it is hundreds upon hundreds of dollars in pins. Yeah.
Intervention.
I have a problem. Dude, I'm going to have to count up my sets of dice.
Oh my gosh.
I'm pretty sure I have over 100 full sets of dice now. Yeah. But a lot of them are mini and they're really cute.
My goodness.
It's so great. Okay, so you don't have no idea about the dice addiction. If we ever get you into D&D.
Never.
The dice addiction.
I don't have time.
Yeah, and it does require time, which I don't have. But hopefully soon.
I remember when I first watched Stranger Things with my sister.
Yeah.
And she was surprised I knew what D&D was.
It's becoming so much more mainstream now. Yeah. So even if people don't play it, they probably know what it is.
Yeah.
Usually I have to explain it. I'll say like, oh, I have D&D, and they'll be like, mm-hmm. what? And I'm like, oh, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
But it's great. It's really fun, mm-hmm. but it is definitely a time commitment. But it's really fun, but it is a bit rough right now trying to keep up with it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, D&D's great, and the cats from Disneyland mm-hmm. are great. And I miss Disney, Casey. I miss it. I also just miss being able to have like a Halloween party. And like get together with people and have a game day. I'm like, oh, I can only hang out with people in my bubble.
I have been to like one Halloween party ever in my life.
Yes, you have said this.
It makes me so mad.
Well, hopefully we'll fix it next year.
Yes.
I think we'll be okay, hopefully, by that time next year. Maybe.
Fingers crossed.
I mean, at least now we'll have someone who puts scientists in charge, so. But that would mean that the citizens of America would actually have to, you know, do it.
Yeah.
So that's our downfall.
Mm-hmm. I always, being American is such a weird feeling because, like, we have some of the greatest institutions for scientific research, yet our general population is very scientifically illiterate.
But I don't feel like that was the case decades ago.
No.
It has gone downhill.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the moon landing time, people were more into it.
Yeah, because we actually invested in science.
Because we invested in a lot of things back then.
Yeah.
That's a whole
but like, just as example, from I believe it was 2006 to 2016, or maybe 2010, was the greatest decrease in government funding for scientific research since the space race.
Yeah. There's many reasons for that. We're not going to get into it on the podcast because we said we'd keep politics out of it.
Yes.
Even though you and I, actually, Casey and I do not agree on a lot of things, politically speaking, but we do agree on other things. But we agree on the most important things together.
Yes.
Anywho's. But yeah, so Disney Kitties. Yeah, but I think you had something that you wanted to touch on that I hope is not going to be as scary as insect sex.
Insect sex is not scary. It's fascinating.
Oh, yeah. Be the female that gets impaled with a friggin', what is it called? What is the bug penis?
Ediagus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You'd be scared.
I remember something I forgot to mention in that because like the shape of the genitals can be what drives to the evolution of other species because they're like a lock and key mechanism because and that'll be actually a way they identify different species because it can only fit in the proper one.
Oh my god. Crazy.
Yes. Science. Actually, that's one of the, when you look at what drives evolution, creates these evolutionary arms race, the two big ones are sex and predator-prey relationships.
That makes sense.
Yep.
Because you need to survive mm-hmm. and then reproduce.
Yes. I will actually be talking about evolutionary arms race later today.
Oh, okay.
Yep. But first, another bio lesson, which you will probably find less traumatic.
Good.
Is on trophic ricochets.
What is that?
So, basically, I'm going to start off with this statement, which seems odd.
Okay.
But it's happening in the forests in the eastern United States.
Okay.
I believe it's white-tailed deer is the species.
Mm-hmm.
And an increase in population density of deer is leading to a decrease in birds.
Okay.
Right. So what's basically happening is... So first, you have to look at historically population of deer. It used to be really low, and that was because lots of logging due to human encroachment back in the 1800s. And then also we were driving out natural predators.
Mm-hmm.
Wolves and cougars were basically extirpated by then, no longer in the area. Still aren't. And there was also a lot of hunting back then. So deer populations were way down. Then 1900s... things started changing. There was starting to have some regulations in terms of forests, and then so there was actually more habitat available for them. Hunting went down some, and then still no wolves or cougars because they're still not around there today. And so their population started to increase. And then you look at the modern day, you'll see that deer populations have exploded out of control over the eastern United States. It's because due to our regulations, there's plenty of forest habitat. Very few people hunt nowadays, actually. So that's another reason.
Which is weird to me because I feel like the main hunting game is deer.
Yeah, typically. But not when you look at the general population, very few people go out hunting anymore.
I mean, I guess back in the day, people were literally hunting to eat dinner.
Yeah.
And but now yeah. it's more sport.
Yeah. I know some people that do it for food, but...
I mean, some people do it for food as well, but it's like a food-sport mix. Yeah. Which I'm not against it if you're doing it for food, but...
Yeah. And, of course, cougars and wolves, their natural predators, are still extirpated, and that is why they are going out of control. Now, because of that, deers like certain kinds of food.
Yeah.
Their favorite thing are pin cherry shoots. Shoots.
Okay.
A shoot is basically a sapling for a tree.
Okay.
And so they're eating all the pin cherry shoots, so there's not very many pin cherries. So all that's really left around are black cherry trees. Mm-hmm. Blackberries don't grow on trees. And some conifers. And
what is a conifer again?
Conifers belong into like the group of trees called gymnosperms. Those are ones that don't have flowers or fruits.
So that's like a pine tree that has a pine cone. Okay.
Yeah. It also includes cycads, which kind of look like palm trees but aren't.
Okay.
But yeah, plants like those and ginkgos, which look absolutely nothing like a conifer.
Great.
Yep. I always think of kind of mountaining higher up areas, those pine trees basically. And so because of that, so deer population has increased, and as a result, the diversity of trees is decreasing. And there's another animal that likes pin cherries, caterpillars.
Okay.
Yes. But, and a lot of times, certain butterfly species and moths, they'll only eat a certain tree or plant, whatever they choose.
Oh.
And so because... deer populations are increasing, decrease in plants, mm-hmm. also decrease in caterpillars.
Makes sense.
So now, because there's less caterpillars, there is the birds that eat insects, especially caterpillars, there's less food.
Makes sense.
So now there's a decrease in bird populations. And that's a ricochet because...
deer. Okay, so it's a ricochet that like one species affects.
Yeah, so basically it's like the top-down effect, it's called a trophic cascade, is where like top predators helps regulate populations. Wolves are a good classic example, especially in Yellowstone, I think is probably most well known. And basically they regulate the population of deer, and that keeps the plant population check. Mm-hmm. That's the cascade effect. And then when that's no longer happening, the effect reaches down to the producers, which are the plants that produce the food for the other trophic levels. And then that ricochets up to other consumers.
Wow, that's crazy. But okay, yep. It makes all the sense though. But it's so complicated.
Yes.
Also, that's my head, ecology. All I'm hearing right now is pew 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 pew, like ricocheting off things.
But yeah, like I'm pretty sure a lot of people have heard it with like Yellowstone, with the wolves being reintroduced, and now the forests are growing again.
Right.
And rivers developing and stuff like that.
Because the deer aren't killing the ecosystem, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's cool.
Yes.
I mean, not cool that the deer are killing it, but if we can get it balanced more.
All wild wolves are being considered for being delisted from the Endangered Species Act.
Because their numbers are good? Because of bullshit?
Well, that's what they're claiming, but it's BS.
Okay.
Because technically they are doing very well population-wise in their global population. But when you look at North America, where all their numbers are is Alaska. Continental United States, they are doing awful.
Yeah.
We have very scattered populations.
Hopefully we'll get good people in charge of EPA and those kind of things and get them to not be.
They need to do some major reform and just make certain parts of government controlled by scientists and not politicians.
What? Not in America. Anyway, okay. Yep. Well, that's cool.
Yes.
So, as I mentioned last week, Casey and I both associate Europe apparently with birds because when we were trying to come up with favorite topics, We both chose birds, essentially. Yep. Although we had, of course, had to modify to Eurasia last time because I went crazy. I went off the range a bit. But this week was my turn to pick. And I think it's almost terrible. I mean, I think of these animals here, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to lie. It's probably partially due with Harry Potter. Mm-hmm. And I am a total basic bitch. And mine is a very obvious choice. Although some of them are really cool.
Yes.
I should say, I was looking at European owls. Picking our favorite European owl. And a lot of them are really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But I just got to go with the classic snowy owl.
Yep.
Yeah.
Basic.
Whatever. They're really cute. And what is your pick, Casey?
My pick was the Eurasian eagle owl.
Okay. Go for it. These are also cool.
Yes. So this is probably the simplest scientific name I've had to say. Bubo Bubo.
That's amazing.
It is actually the largest owl in the world.
Ooh.
Yes. It weighs about 3.5 to 9.3 pounds.
Oh, that's really big for a flying bird.
Yes. But it averages more around 3.
That would make sense.
Yes. And it's about 65 centimeters tall. That's about 2 feet.
Okay.
And its wingspan is about 1.5 to 2 meters long.
So probably about 4-ish feet, 5-ish feet?
That's a me.
Are you serious?
Yes. That's 4.92 to 6 and a half feet.
I'm like imagining my body. That's really big.
Yes.
Holy snap.
Yeah.
For an owl? That's crazy. Yeah.
And there's still other birds that are bigger than them.
Well, yes, but those are more, I mean, I was going to say predatory, but I mean, you know, like condors and shit like that.
Yeah. And they are a sexually dimorphic species.
Almost everything is sexually dimorphic.
Well,
we need to do stats and go back, and I think like 90%, 95%.
Of what we've chosen, yes.
Yeah.
It's because of the environments we pick. If we go, when we go to Africa and there's deserty kind of environments, it'll be different probably. Okay. But yeah, but in these ones, the females are larger.
Oh yeah, get it, girls.
Yes, that is actually typical in most raptor species. The females will be larger.
Mm-hmm.
That's also kind of the basis for why some scientists think that when they look at theropod dinosaur fossils, the larger ones are females.
Hmm, okay.
Yep. And they are a monogamous species.
Yeah.
And in the wild, they live on average about 20 years.
Okay.
They can live significantly longer in captivity, up to their 60s.
Wow, nice. Yep.
'Cause life's hard as a predator.
It is.
Yep. And they are nocturnal, so they will roost up in trees and then start hunting at dusk. But they will occasionally hunt during the day, but only if food is especially scarce.
Have you ever had one fly down by your car while you're driving at night? Because that's scary.
I have not. Especially not this species.
Well, no, not this species. But I've been, because I go to visit my parents in Arizona, and there's some owl out there in the desert. And they will, probably, I'm assuming bugs and stuff are coming near your windshield. Mm-hmm. They'll dive down. It scares you to death.
Yeah.
Anyway, continue.
Okay. I don't know. I used to see, when I went to this one campground, I used to see this one owl. I don't know the species. I would see it on the power lines a lot.
Oh, yeah.
I would like to say it's a great horned owl, but I don't know.
Okay.
I have no clue. And these guys actually have very large territories that they won't venture out of. And average is about 42 square kilometers. But they can be large as 80 square kilometers.
I don't do metrics, so that means nothing to me.
Well, I didn't want to do square miles because I didn't want to do the conversions.
Okay. What is that in acres, Casey? What is
I have no clue in acres. Okay. Acres are even smaller. They're currently listed as least concerned by the IUCN Red List.
Mm-hmm.
Population is estimated at 100,000 to about 500,000 mature individuals.
Okay.
And the population is declining currently. And they are listed under Appendix 2 of CITES. I am doubtful you're going to get this name.
I don't remember the CITES thing. International something of endangered species?
Yeah, you're around it. It's the Convention of International Trade of Endangered Species of Wild Fauna and Flora.
No, okay, continue.
Yes. So under Appendix 2, those species, this is according to their website, then export or permit or re-export certificate issued by the management authority of the state of export or re-export is required. An export permit may be issued only if this specimen was legally obtained, if the export will not be detrimental to the survival of the species. A re-export certificate may be issued only if the specimen was imported in accordance with the convention.
That is complicated.
Yes, that's the point. In the case of a live animal or plant, it must be prepared and shipped to minimize any risk of injury, damage to health, or cruel treatment. And no import permit is needed unless required by national law.
So there you go, folks. Yes. If you're planning to import I already forgot the name of this one.
Eurasian eagle owl.
Thank you. Eurasian. I was like, king. That's wrong. That was last week. Eurasian eagle owl.
Yeah.
Eurasian eagle owl. That's also hard to say.
Eurasian eagle owl. Eurasian eagle owl. Eurasian eagle owl. Eurasian eagle owl.
It was kind of there. Does it continue, though? Oh, was that it?
Yes.
Oh, just
kidding. This is actually the only animal I've ever, that we've had so far, I've seen listed under CITES.
Oh, okay. Wait, didn't, or did we just talk about CITES?
We just talked about CITES.
Oh, okay.
Because for some reason I decided to start including it.
Just gonna add things as we go. All right, well, that's cool. Those guys are really cool. I am excited to post pictures.
I've seen them at the safari park, and it's cool when they do, like, their talks with them, because, like, you don't realize just how much feather is on them, and they'll, like, show you that you can take your finger and touch his chest, your finger will be completely covered in feathers.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy.
And also, they're silent when they fly.
If they lift up the feathers, kind of like around the legs, you're like, mm-hmm. Look how skinny you are. Okay.
And the muscular, terrifying talons.
Yeah, the talons are a bit intimidating. Well, I chose the snowy owl. Which people
what
will recognize.
Is, let me think. I'm trying to remember its name.
Hedwig. Sorry.
Oh my gosh.
Sorry. I should have let you do it.
How dare you?
I'm sorry.
Continue.
I was about to say a spoiler, and I was like, I probably shouldn't say that if people haven't read the books all the way or seen the movies, but one of the worst of those situations. I was very upset. Anyway. The snowy owl's scientific name is Bubo scandiacus. Diacus.
Close enough.
Okay. Sure. We'll go with that.
Yep. It's like, actually the closest relative is the Eurasian eagle owl.
That's because they're really cool. They're both really cool. They are about 20 to 28 inches. Their wingspan is only 42 feet. Could you imagine? Oh, my God. 4.2. That'd be a lot.
Yeah, I think that might be as large as Quetzalcoatlus' wingspan was.
What is that?
It's an extinct pterosaur. Wait. Largest flying animal that ever lived.
That sounds horrifying. Anyway, sorry, their wingspan is 4.2 to 4.8 feet, so shorter than me, but not by a ton. They weigh about 3.5 to 6.5 pounds. Yeah, they're pretty big too then. They gotta be, so they can carry all those letters and stuff. They're the heaviest owl in North America, although of course they're also in Europe, but they're in North America too. They have dense feathers on their legs to keep insulated from the cold, because they're so cute. They're in the cold places, typically a monogamous species. Sometimes a pair may not mate if there is very little food available. That makes sense. They're smart parents. They're like, we're not going to be able to feed our kids. So we're not going to have them this
the
year.
The funny thing is, if you talk to biologists,
they'll
like always say like how so many people think of owls as like smart and wise because like all the child books and stuff. And it's like, they're one of the dumbest birds out there.
I mean, A, they're a bird, so there's that.
There's some very smart birds.
What is a very smart bird?
Ravens.
Oh, okay, that's true. They're
parrots.
Yeah, I guess parrots are very smart. Mm-hmm. Smart asses is more like it.
Also, I just want to say, I believe that ravens and their relatives should be included in the top 5 most intelligent animals, but they're not.
Who are the top 5?
If I remember correctly, it is dolphins, elephants, pigs, primates, and parrots.
Huh, okay. Anyway. Yeah, so there you go. Now you know that. But yes, so they are good parents, and they won't have children if they can't afford to feed them. Oh, that's really sad. I didn't know this about them. Their primary prey item are lemmings.
Yep.
Oh no.
That's something a big cute, animal.
Something cute here. Eating something cuter. That's terrible. Anyway, on keep average, reading. What?
Yes.
Oh my god. On average, they will eat 3 to 5 per day, totaling to more than 1,600 lemmings a year.
Yep.
Oh man, lemmings.
Rodent control, man.
You gotta watch out. Unlike other owls, they are diurnal, which is very different from mm-hmm. most animals, and are typically more active during the day. Females are larger than the males on average. Yes, girls. Males are nearly completely white as adults, while females have some dark freckles scattered amongst the feathers. I feel like Hedwig was probably a girl then. Didn't she have more?
I think I could have sworn Hedwig was a girl.
Is Hedwig a girl?
I'm pretty
I
sure.
I think Hedwig is a girl. I think you're right. I think I'm crazy. I think she is.
I'm pretty sure that Hedwig's a girl.
I'm dumb. It's been a while, guys.
Mm-hmm.
And it's among one of the few owl species that builds its own nest. And they nest on the ground in small mounds. They are listed as least concerned by the IUCN Red List. Population is currently in decline, though, which I'm sure is because of people, because mm-hmm. we suck. But anyway, aside from the lemming fact, which is terrifying, they're adorable, kind of. And I personally just think they're really awesome, and not just because Hedwig, I just think they're really cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
But my second choice would have been Casey's choice.
Yeah.
But in general, owls are just awesome.
Yes.
But those talons, no joke. When you're up close and personal with them, be like, please don't.
Mm-hmm. That's one way you can always tell if someone's holding a bird of prey. It's like, look at their hand. Is it? Are they wearing a glove? It's a bird of prey.
Yeah. And if they're not, are they bleeding?
Yes.
Is there blood running down from their hand? Because also a bird of prey. Oh my gosh. I should share that for one of our, in case you missed it. Have you seen, I think he's been on more than once. But have you seen the episode of whichever show Jimmy Fallon hosts and Kevin Hart's on and they have animals? Robert Irwin is there. And oh my God, Kevin Hart with animals is the funniest. He's so freaked out about it. It is the funny.
Why does that not surprise me?
I encourage you to look it up. It is so funny. Oh my gosh, I couldn't. I was dying laughing. Anyway, but yeah, so this is our last week in Europe, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. We're very avian.
I saved the best for last for our animal of the week, too.
Okay. So far, what have we done? We did the European mink and the Schelpusnik.
Schelpusnik.
And then last week was the rock, don't tell me,
Ptarmigan.
Ptarmigan. And then, of course, we'll have this one shortly. But mm-hmm. And then our picks were the Greek animals.
There you go.
And then the birdies. And what was our other one?
Birds this week, birds last week.
Yeah.
Jellyfish,
right, because craziness. Anyway, that had nothing to do with Europe. But anyway.
It's because it was around National Jellyfish Day.
That's right. Anywho's, but it is time. We're still sticking with a flying theme.
Yes.
This week's Animal of the Week is...
the Alcon Blue Butterfly.
No idea, but it sounds pretty. Tell us about it, Casey.
Well, I'm going to say, I will argue this is the coolest animal I've done.
That we've ever done as our animal?
Yes. Okay, so.
I will be the judge of that.
I think you're going to be fascinated.
Okay.
So they come from the order Lepidoptera, which is moths, butterflies, and skippers.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, Lepidoptera translates to scale wing because their wings are covered in scales.
Oh, okay.
Which is what gives them their color.
That's cool.
And the family it come from is Lysanidae. Those are the gossamer-winged butterflies.
All right.
They are actually the second largest group of butterflies at around 6,000 species.
Ooh.
About 30% of butterfly species.
What is the largest?
I don't remember.
How dare you. Good thing you don't have your degree yet or I'd judge you more.
Classifying butterflies is also a pain because you're trying to look at their veins and their wings and it's covered in scales. And it's like, I can't tell.
With that creepy voice, poor butterflies. Like, I just want to live my life. Leave me alone, man.
Mm-hmm. And the scientific name is Phengaris alcon.
That's awesome.
Yep. These guys are found in northern Portugal, as well as most of France, and from Germany to as far east as Greece.
Mm-hmm.
They live in grassy meadows, typically moist meadows, and they're found at elevations no higher than 1,000 meters above sea level.
Wow, okay.
And this is going to be a more technical termy episode.
Okay.
Because this species is a univoltine species.
What does that mean?
That means it has one generation per year.
Oh, okay.
So, and these guys are small. Probably, yeah, the smallest animal of the week yet. With a wingspan of 30 to 36 millimeters.
Oh my goodness, a little bug.
Yes. And like several other insects, the females are larger than the males.
Nice. What are they size-wise like related to like a monarch? Because that's obviously what we're most familiar with here.
I believe these guys are probably maybe half the size of a monarch.
Oh my gosh, okay.
I don't know. I can't remember the size of a monarch. Because
Well, probably with the wings, that's probably like yay.
Yeah, because 30 to 36 millimeters, about 3.6 centimeters, which is a little more than an inch.
That's little.
Yes.
Okay, anyway, continue. Yeah.
And the caterpillars feed on a species of wildflower called the marsh gentian. And sometimes they will also be found on the will gentian. And they will eat only these two species of wildflower and nothing else. Yeah, a lot of butterfly species are have co-evolved with plants, so they will only eat very specific species of plants. Okay. So like other butterflies, the caterpillars are what's called a polypod larvae.
What does that mean?
So that means they have three pairs of true legs.
Okay.
And because you'll notice like there's like a lot of times they'll look like they have several legs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Those are not true legs. Oh. Those are just pro legs that act as support.
That's amazing. Okay. Yes.
Also, I have no clue why they're called pro legs. Because they're not found on the portion of the body that's called pro anything.
Okay.
Yep. And their life cycle is why I think they're the coolest.
Okay.
After hatching, they will spend the first few weeks feeding on the plant just like any old typical caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing with this species, they share the meadow environment with Myrmica ants. That's a certain genus of ants.
Okay.
They can be very ravenous predators.
The caterpillar or the ants?
The ants.
Okay.
As far as I know, the only carnivorous caterpillars are in Hawaii.
Okay.
And after reaching a certain instar, and an instar is a stage after molting, so like, it's mm-hmm. first molt, first instar, third instar, because it's annoying to refer to the third molted stage of the caterpillar. Yeah. It will fall off the leaf of the plant onto the ground, and the caterpillar releases chemical signals that trick the ant into thinking it's an ant larvae.
That's yep. smart. It's like, don't eat me. I'm one of
yes.
you.
Yes, and then the ant will take it back to the nest, and they will take care of it.
That is hilarious.
Yes. So it will, and they will actually often take care of the caterpillar over at the expense of their actual offspring in the nest.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, there was actually a study found that if a nest gets parasitized by just a few caterpillars, there's a 50% chance none of its brood will survive.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and then there's been evidence for another kind of mimicry in their later life stages.
Okay.
They will actually make sounds that mimic the queen. And so they will take care of the caterpillar still.
That's awesome.
Yes. So it keeps on molting, and then when it finally reaches the final instar stage, it will go into its pupa, and they have, like other ones, they have an optect. Adictitious pupa called a chrysalis.
So do they do that inside the nest still?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And by the way, optect means the mouth parts and the legs are not visible while they're in the pupa stage. And adictitious means that they will use their body to break out of this,
okay,
the cocoon instead of mouth parts like mm-hmm. some beetles do. And once it emerges from the chrysalis, it will quickly exit the ant nest because it doesn't want to die. And then, like other butterflies, it goes, lives its life, mates, lays eggs, and dies. Mm-hmm. And there are actually two ant species that the butterfly will use in its parasitic lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There's the Myrmica rubra and the Myrmica ruginotis.
Okay.
Yeah. So this is the evolution of arms race that I was referencing to earlier.
Okay.
Because in areas where, because these ants are very common, but the plants and the butterfly are not very common.
Mm, okay.
So in areas where there's ant colonies that get infested by these caterpillars, there's an evolutionary arms race going on, and because ants are coated in these chemicals that allow them for recognizing each other. Mm-hmm. They have found that these chemicals are very different from the general population in areas where these caterpillars are.
Oh.
And that's because the ants are trying to become more discriminatory to get caretakers because they do not want to be infested by these ants because they're getting to destroy the colony.
Yeah.
And then as a response to that, the caterpillar will find better ways to deceive the ants. And that's probably the origin to them mimicking the sounds of the queen.
That's funny.
Yes. And another thing that I found interesting is that it was only one species where this evolutionary arms race was discovered.
Okay.
That was in the M. rubra ants. The other species had pretty similar chemical coatings throughout the whole population.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes down to how these ants breed. The ones that are evolving rapidly are the ones, how they breed is they queens will stay in the local area and mate with males nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other ones will take flight, disperse widely, and mate with ones in other areas where they'll be able to get more mixing with ants that don't encounter these caterpillars.
So if you want to, like, insult someone by suggesting they're a parasite, you're like, ugh, you're being a total Alcon blue butterfly. What an Alcon.
It's so weird. There's another interesting part of this story.
Okay.
The butterfly also has a predator of its own to worry about.
Okay.
I'm going to try to pronounce this.
Aren't all butterflies have predators?
But this one's really cool.
Oh, okay.
It's the Ichneumon humerus, which is a species of parasitic wasps.
Ugh, no. Yes. Is this one that they lay their eggs in the little caterpillar?
Yeah, so
and
this...
then the caterpillar goes to the nest.
Hold on.
Okay.
So the wasp specializes in hunting this specific species of caterpillar.
Mm-hmm.
So it uses its antenna, and when it smells the Alcon butterfly caterpillar in an ant nest, it will go down, and then it will enter the colony. Then it'll spray this cocktail of chemicals. It causes the ants to attack each other. And in the chaos, this wasp sneaks in, goes to the caterpillar, stings and injects its eggs and leaves. And then the caterpillar will continue to grow, feed. And then once it turns into a chrysalis, the wasp's eggs will hatch and eat it from the inside out.
Awful.
It's
horror
awesome.
Stories, and that wasp is an absolute anarchist.
Yes.
Just absolute chaos.
But you see any possible issues?
With the caterpillars or with what?
Caterpillars and wasps or the ants.
All of them. The poor ants are just getting the short stick.
That's the funny thing is, like, Nat Geo had an article where it compared the ants as innocent civilians.
They are.
And stuck into between a battle of gods.
It is.
It's like, also I love the image of, like, the gods that are battling are butterflies and wasps.
And wasps. Oh my gosh.
But yeah.
The ants are totally getting screwed.
Yeah. But that's what the interest, there's a dilemma with, because there's so much specialization in how these insects have evolved. Because if the ants go extinct, the Alcon butterfly goes too.
And so then do if no Alcon butterflies survive on their own? Do they all depend on an ant colony?
Yes, they absolutely rely on ants taken care of.
What a parasite.
Yes, there is actually...
Unlike the maned wolf that worked in tandem with the leafcutter ants and were good neighbors.
Yeah. But then as a result, if the ants die out, the butterfly dies out, then also the parasitic wasps dies out.
Yeah.
And there's actually a butterfly that was in England. It's also found in the mainland Europe. It actually went extinct in England because they were just focusing on protecting the grassland habitats, and they weren't thinking about the ants that needed to be there. And as a result, it went extinct. And now it's been reintroduced, and they're doing a better job at managing it.
That's good.
Yes. It's so cool.
This is all terrifying.
It's awesome.
It's awful.
It's awesome.
It was supposed to be a pretty butterfly, Casey, and you ruined it.
It's awesome.
Well, I guess more it's the wasp sucking. I mean, the butterfly still sucks.
I still say it's the coolest animal we've done.
No.
Yes.
No.
Absolutely.
I think the Wolverine's cooler. A little badass.
No, this is way cooler. So.
This is way cooler.
It is.
All right. Well, all right. This... listeners, let us know which animal's the coolest. We've done how many of them now?
17.
Oh, yeah, that would make sense. I was doing math the months instead of just doing what episode we're on.
Oh, my gosh.
Anyway, you can tell where my brain's at.
Oh, my goodness. But, yeah, so these butterflies are listed as least concern right now. Population trend is currently in decline. And biggest threat is fragmentation, isolation.
That makes sense. And if those ants go,
And there are several different butterfly species that, and some of them, it's only one species of ant they can rely on.
That's so crazy.
Yep.
And they only
and then there's plant. They can also have their own parasitic wasps.
It's crazy.
It's
Casey.
Awesome.
It's crazy.
It's awesome.
It's
awesome,
crazy.
Man. It's awesome.
It's interesting, but it's crazy.
Yes, life is crazy, which is why biology is awesome.
Okay. I like performing. Thank you. I like singing and dancing.
Yeah, much better.
Let's write a musical
much better.
About this stuff. We could write a musical about this wasp. I feel like this would be more of an interpretive dance, like a ballet, of the little caterpillar, and then it gets brought into the ant colony, and they take care of it, and it's like, ha, 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 and then a wasp comes in, and then you don't know what happens, and then, like, red lights everywhere, and anyway. So that is our final animal of the week.
Yes.
For Europe, for November. Next week / month, we go into December, and we're going to Africa, Casey. I don't know why there's confusion on that.
Yep.
And then we're going to go down, and then over, and then down, and then over, and then back to South America. Next, will be next year, by the time we get back to
okay.
the other round. Oh, you planning right now?
I don't know.
Okay, get it together. But yes, and of course, don't forget that soon we will post options you can choose from African animals on Patreon that you can choose who we talk about. But before we leave, Casey, it is time for a challenge.
Yes, that we will fail.
We will fail again. But we're doing 3 minutes, and we're going to do our cup thing. If you can't hear that, we're going to do our cups again because we didn't get through all these. So we're just going to keep going until we get through all these animals, and then eventually we're going to come up with new animals.
Yes.
Should I go first? I feel like you went first last time, right? Okay. We have our timer ready for 3 minutes.
Yes.
And remember, if you get it to the right, don't get left. Okay, cool. Ready? Are we ready?
Yes.
Here we go. You chose this as your Halloween-y thing. They suck blood.
Oh, vampire moth.
Yeah.
Oh, it's, lives deep in the ocean.
An anglerfish?
No, it,
an angel shark?
Close.
Oh, no. It's some sort of shark?
Yes.
An angel shark. Oh, no, I don't know. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I wrote this.
Oh, you did?
It's a zombie shark? No, there's some sort of other thing that's like that, a skeleton.
So, there's a lizard that has this.
A frilled shark.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's it. What the fuck? Okay. This is the type of fish, I can say fish, that is popular, and they are black and orange. They're black and orange.
Koi?
No. And it's, oh, I'm terrified of this thing. I make you cover it when you wear it on your shirt.
Clown? Oh, clownfish.
No. A different one. If you're, when people sneak into Africa and they kill rhinos, they are...
Poachers?
Yeah, but now it doesn't...
Clown poachers?
No, clown poacher.
Clown loaches?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
But anyway, yeah.
It's my turn, girl.
I know, I'm just getting it ready.
One of our closest living relatives.
A chimpanzee.
Yes.
Yay. This is a cool thing, and you know, if your house is burning, that's a what California is half the year.
Fire ant.
No, but not that. It's a different one. It's fire.
Earthquake.
No, it's no. Stick with the disaster.
Okay, fire.
But then it's I don't know how to describe this. It's not a lizard. It's fire. It's not a newt.
Fire salamander.
Yeah.
Unicorn.
A rhino. An Indian from, rhino.
Yes.
Rhinoceros. Okay. This is one of the, it has a really bad attitude in Africa, and I'm, I
think Cape Buffalo.
Second, yeah.
Oh, it's one of your favorite cats?
What am I? There's so many cats. A black-footed cat?
Big cat.
Oh, big cat. A tiger.
But it lives in the ocean.
Oh, in the ocean?
Yes, it's actually something that lives in the ocean. But that was it. Tiger was in its name.
Oh, okay. A tiger or a shark?
Yes.
Okay, I was like, the fuck are you talking about? I don't even know what this is. Hey, that owl I talked about today was a...
Snowy owl?
Yeah. And this is where you put your sword?
Sheath?
Yes. And what a mouth is on a duck.
Bill?
Yeah. Put them together. Owl?
Wait. Owl?
No, the first part of the owl.
Snowy... Sheath... Bill? What?
No idea. I tried to look up random animals, man.
What the... Give me that. I'm Googling it.
It's probably a bird. I don't know.
Snowy Sheath...
Sheath Bill.
Bill.
We did terrible again, Casey. It's a bird, see?
It's a lame bird.
Well, whatever. It's a bird.
All right, you got...
I tried to choose things that weren't...
Two.
Obvious.
You got four.
One, two, three, four, five. We did nine. What did we get last time? Didn't we do 10?
I
think
I don't know.
I think we did 10. We did 8 or 10. I'm pretty sure it was even. I can find out. It was, wait, no, that's the wrong bag. How many is in there? I'll count and let people know later. But anyway, yeah, that brings us to the end of our 17th episode, Casey. We can go watch a, it can go watch your rated R movie on its own. When the movie theater's open again. And next will be our 18th.
Yes.
You'll be able to vote, and you should have voted. So.
Judging
if you didn't. Yeah, and it can do all kinds. Our podcast will be a legal adult in the U.S., but not able to drink yet. So, that's the thing. Anywho, and we go into Africa, so you know there's going to be some cool stuff. I don't know. There's so many possibilities.
Yes.
I don't even know where we're going with that. But you can have a say in that if you join Patreon. So you should do that. Anyway, I hope you're all having a great month. And we're going to have an even better month, hopefully next... I almost said year. Next month.
And in the month of presents.
And then we will start a new year, and we'll see what happens with that year.
Yep.
Is it going to be 2020 2.0, or is it going to get better? Only time will tell.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us on our 17th episode of the Animal Addicts Podcast. As always, we're your hosts, Allie.
And Casey.
Casey!
What?
I failed!
Oh, you didn't do two puns!
You get ready next month, everyone. I'm going to have 2 days. I can't believe I forgot that. There are going to be 2 episodes of 2 puns.
Oh, good
I'm
lord.
I'm so mad at myself right now. So mad. Anyway, totally derailed that at the very end.
How dare you.
But yes, the closing of our 17th episode. And on 18, we're going to have 2 puns. So you just look out for that. And we will catch you on the next episode of the Animal Addicts Podcast, journeying into Africa. That, I don't know why that was spooky.
What's that? How's that song go? By Shakira.
Oh, I thought you were going to do Bless the Rains Down in Africa. Toto. Anyway. Yes, so we will catch you in Africa. Have a great rest of your week.